This panel discussion was recorded at the Green Tribe Open Day on Sunday, the 12th of September, 2021. And using personal experiences, we talk about the motivations of gardening in squatted spaces, as well as some of the problems and solutions that we have encountered along the way. If you enjoy what you're listening to, please follow Soil Matters on your favorite podcast platform. And please, if you're on Apple Podcasts, please rate Soil Matters because it helps us reach more people.
Today, we have three other guests. So we've got Shoko, who probably a lot of you know. And Shoko's a classical pianist and a squatter and a resident here at the Green Tribe, and maybe the resident gardener as well, which is really lovely. And I guess I'd say that you also probably are quite open to experimenting with different things in the garden, which I think is quite cool. And then we've got Samantha in the middle here. Samantha lives at the Rectangle Bar and has for a long time involved with the garden at the RDM at the old site, and was a resident there and involved with the garden at the Smith Builder, and has contributed to lots of different projects over the years around Amsterdam. And I know you also have worked a lot with worm farms and composting and organizing a lot of different workshops around that over the years, which is really cool. And then here we are, just next to me is Erica from the Kinderprep, and and also for a long time has done a lot of different things around Amsterdam, I think. But also involved in the garden at the RDM for a long time, and now at the new site at the Spitfelder, and yeah, you also have a lot of knowledge in medicinal herbs and how to make different cosmetic products from different plants, which is really fantastic. So thank you all for coming on, and it's really nice to have you here. And I guess I was thinking of, to start discussion, maybe we could sort of paint a picture of the different gardens that you all work in. So, like the RDM and the Green Tribe and the Rectangle Bar. So, sort of I was thinking in terms of what conditions are there in the garden, like what is the soil like, how is it set up, do you plant directly in the ground, or do you need to build from the ground up, is it a very wet place, who's sort of around in the garden, who's working there, just to like get a sort of overview of what the space looks like, if you could sort of paint a picture, and whoever wants to go first.
Yeah. I can. So, talking about the Green S Garden, which is situated now in the north in Slipvelden, that's the new site where one third of the people who used to live in the old ADM are based now. So, yeah, to give you a picture. the Green S Garden started in the old ADM site in 2010. When we decided to make a bigger communal garden, because people living there, they had their own private spots all over the place, but the people living there wanted to have a more open space in the sun, and also people from the city could help out there, and that was my luck. Because I never lived in ADM, I'm not living in Slipvelde, but I love to garden, and on the third floor in town, I needed something. So I was very happy to start out there. But maybe what's more interesting now is to describe the new site in the Slipvelde. So from the old garden, which had to be evicted in end of 2018, beginning of 2019, we moved like 12 cubes of soil. Some people around remember this very well. So we put it, the earth, which was already after 10 years very rich with soil life, with worms, and we even had a concert just before eviction, like Save the Worm tour from a German violin player. That's what we were doing, actually, as a matter.
We were eating the garden and then taking the earth out.
Yeah, first we were
eviction.
Taking the food out and then the soil and the seeds also. Yeah. So we brought this soil into the new space. The new space was already very suspected from the beginning because it was old sewage like cleaning space, the water, waterzuivering, the water cleaning space from Amsterdam, but the sewage water came there and would flow through three or actually six beds. Then the dirt would sink down in this space. And that's exactly where we got the new space to live and absolutely to do a new garden, because I was convinced that it's important to take over. We build a dome there, a greenhouse, which is, well, I'm looking now at a different dome, a white one. So what we have is a green one, which is especially for the plants. So we moved the dome to the spot and we took out all brambles there first. It was the spot what was not hardened, because the hardened space was for meant for people to live, to put their wagons on or their containers or their stuff. But this was the only space available. And we took out the brambles and we saw reed. So reed means something. It means it's very wet. It's a swamp. And okay, the more brambles we took out there and the more space we created, the more water rose. And yeah, it was from the beginning pretty hard to make a garden there. We knew the soil was polluted, but we did an extended, really official investigation to test the soil. So nice to see that all kinds of pollution are there. A lot of heavy metals, they call it the oil. What was the name? Well, there is oil from petrol and other stuff. I just lost the name, I will tell later. And then also the PCB, so plastic pollution. And actually we don't know if there was also, if there is still medicine or something else that people put into the sewage. When they throw things away or from their urinating. So, taking into account this, we decided to build beds off the soil with the root cloth, so the roots from the plants even could not get there. But then we started on the highest spots where the water was the lowest. And then, we had good sun. We have good sun there. I chose the space for the south. It's not so windy. It's like there is an enclosure of some trees and some wagons on the other side, and still a lot of brambles. And so then I will tell a little bit about the new space we built since last November, because in the beginning we got from here, from the Green Tribe, we got willows, we got like branches from willows to fight the moist. I was convinced that we should do something So we planted them along our pathway in the garden, and they already, but they only suck water when from April on. So all winter it kept wet, and then in spring it made a big difference to have the willow trees there. But that was not enough, actually. In March, when the garden season starts, I went there and I wore wearing this boot, like the fishing suit. And we dug some holes to let the water go away. Yeah. But when I was walking in this fisher's rubber thing, and I wanted to make my way to somewhere, I couldn't see the holes anymore because the water was over the knee deep. And then I would put my feet in the holes because I couldn't see them, and I would fall flat on my belly and on my face in the water. So it was kind of... And I was the only one working in the garden because people could not come there. They won't have this fisher's suit. They wouldn't be in the garden to help me. So it was a bit of a... And then finally someone came back from Italy, and he was really into dig a canal. So a small canal.
I know that one.
Yeah, and that is the newest thing. Well, when it was dug, there came a lot of space in an area which was also full of brambles before. And I was walking there with Chiara. She's doing a lot of stuff in the garden too. We get back to that later. And we both had kind of nice vision when we saw the kennel. We thought this could be a really great like food forest border. So because this open space was lined out with bigger trees, like poplars and smaller trees. And it became an open, yeah, way beside the canal. We have a path, and now that's our new medicinal food forest border. It became. I love to work with herbs, so we have them there, a bit like with an overview and with some kind of nice primitive signs. And then, it is also a space where workshops and stuff could be, but also many people love to walk their dogs on the path out on the street, the entrance. A very long introduction maybe, but I hope you see a bit of the picture, or otherwise come by on a Friday afternoon.
Actually, I've been at the Rijkshemelvaart for 2 years only, one day after the eviction of Adiem. So I don't know the gardens there that well, but after learning from Deborah, who's in the audience, I always mention she knows you. I mentioned Deborah several times from Demo Town. Urbania Hoover, I learned a lot there. I went my way because I do a lot of upcycle work. So I integrated the idea of upcycle materials and upcycle your garden. It's not pure permaculture, but it's bringing the two elements together. And that seemed to be my path. So then I continue to I call them Dale Town. So it's a shares garden, like your Andale. It's your shares. Use your brain. And I started one in the Yasmina in Amsterdam North with Aymira, which was hilarious because there was a bit of reclaimed garden land behind some boarded up houses, and they wanted to do something with it. So you do stuff with gardens, do you want to do stuff with gardens there? And I went yes. And if you're asking about the soil, it was an interesting project because they had to put snippers because they'd smashed all the gardens to make it not desirable for the youth to hang out, but there was nothing there, so they wanted it to be a garden to make it look nice, you know, and be living. But I didn't trust the ground because it was freshly smashed, just got snippers. So I made boxes with that observation. And actually it was the squatters from that row of houses that helped make sure the garden happened. And we used an old bath. We didn't have a water supply, so we caught rainwater in the bath. I asked the people destroying the houses if we could use the stashed doors to make a cuss with the glass, and actually the children of the area came and helped, and I taught them how to use power tools. So you asked about the soil. That was an interesting exercise in doing something that still keeps something alive. It was an introduction to community gardening. I don't go high. I'm not intellectual very much. I'm hands-on, and I just give people a taste of something so that they work together. And it's a bit of a social permaculture as well. I go to Erica or Deborah if I need to know stuff about plants. But so that was one exercise. The other exercise was the luta afterwards. I'd already had the experience of the jasmine garden, and I went there, and it's large today, and it used to be a tennis court. So again, I finally got my education to Dutch ground. It's like everything sand for half a meter for as long as they haven't built on it again. So that's a good knowledge to have if you want to set something up anywhere in Holland. You'll be confronted with this because you don't know what's underneath the half meter for trees, and you don't know what's in the soil that they put, because it's usually rubbish, it's rubble or sand. So they had that, and they'd left it for 10 years, so there was reed because it was all morassy. So I used logic. I'm a simple gardener, so I used logic, and I put three layers of bicycle packaging cardboard, big pieces of cardboard. I did it at Deborah's garden actually as well. We hunted bicycle packaging. And then we did large, like 3, 4, 5, 6 layers of cardboard and walked on it. Remember to walk on it. And then you can make your own earth. You keep the paths clear, even from reed. And you create your own earth. You start creating your own pathway, clear way, basis for what you want. And then remember to use shallow plants, whatever you're doing. Anyway, and now I'm at the right stage. That was a beautiful exercise. Luta, loved it. And the rest was in boxes because you can't trust the earth, and I didn't have money for a really expensive soil test. And it was a short term. It's also a reclaimed space, so we weren't really sure how long we were going to be there. So if the worst comes to the worst, you fork the boxes, or you dig the earth, or put it in big bags, as you learn there, and take it with you, for goodness sake. Fertile soil is super valuable, it's amazing. And now I'm at the Hemelvaart, and what's interesting about the Hemelvaart is, who's listening? They were growing green stuff for quite a long time with that special soil with perlite in it. So there's a lot of that around, and the real soil seems to be pretty okay because it's right in the middle next to a government building, and they just clipped the fence and took 5 more meters and turned that into gardens at some certain point. And they discussed it for 2 years as a group, and that didn't happen. So then people autonomously made their own gardens. But then again, you have social permaculture. So you have autonomous gardens. As soon as COVID started, we all just bought loads of seeds and shared them. So that's a social cohesion. And your question about the soil, I'll come back to that. It's not necessarily the soil that's a problem there, because we created our own. I made boxes with horse manure with Jefto with my specific garden. Jassen's amazing, he'll always make sure it's good soil. But it's the dust, it's the fine dust coming from the motorway that people see. Yeah, so there's another factor, it's the air. You know, they're also next to, next to the motorway as well. You're right in the middle of the road.
Yeah.
So the everyone's saying to me, like, we don't want to eat stuff from your garden because of the fine dust. So the next thing is to think about how to catch particles and still feel good about what you're eating. So it's not only the soil underneath, it's the air above to think about. I'll leave it like that for now.
Yeah.
There's many different things to think about.
Yeah, thanks a lot. I've only got like more questions from hearing you.
Uh-oh. Your turn.
Hi. So about garden, how it started, how it's grown to you, that's the question. Yeah, in this place, it was many widows when we got this place. Widow everywhere, so first we start cutting widows and make space for our living space and gardens. And of course, this ground was 20 years ago, their building, and that was also spotted.
Yes!
The Elf was a great place.
Yeah, that was Elf.
Maybe someone is here from Elf, I don't know.
Hilarious.
Somebody, yeah, like it was party place, there was a party going on, rainbow gathering, sharing. Yeah, I was not
magic
there,
kitchen.
So okay, magic kitchen. It was a great squad, but they got evicted 20 years ago, and they destroyed buildings too. And after that, they put sand everywhere in this ground. And after that, nothing happened. So what happened is just trees took over the old land naturally, all willows. Willows is the like beginning of the most fast tree that comes to the ground, that is the easy growing tree. So yeah, you see the big tree behind there, that also willows, and then back there it's a bit foresty area that there are many different trees also growing there. But the middle part was anyway, it was just only the willows and not much other trees or just grass. Maybe a little bit leaf, but it was not so wet. This place was not so wet, so
fertile.
The soil itself.
So we
was
want
not
some
so
soil from Hement Amsterdam, the city hall Amsterdam cut trees and they composted the trees and make soil from the trees from Amsterdam, and we got soil from that company and made a garden bed. First we put cardboard. Me personally, I don't like this plastic cover.
It's less now. It's less now since the new owner a bit.
What,
the plastic is less.
Yeah.
The plastic
in the soil.
Yeah,
it's less.
Yeah, it's terrible. Well, stays
there. When we bought, we bought the soil twice, and there was a huge difference between the first and the second.
It changed owner.
Oh,
really?
Okay.
Yeah, that's the difference.
Right. Okay. The first time, there were chunks of plastic
and glass.
People were like, "Let's not buy it again." But in the end, we bought it again because it's just so cheap, and it is like a big, so cheap for a beginning product.
But that was also very young, not composted for more than 3 months or something. The first one was really young soil.
Yeah.
The second one was...
you can ask for older soil.
Yeah,
we also did that the second time. So then that was the whole reason, but I guess just part of the reason that it improved so much.
Yeah, I think so.
But anyway, we put cardboard on the bottom of the garden bed and create a garden bed on top of the cardboard. And that's how we made a garden bed in the Green Tribe. And keep adding horse manure. This year I wanna try some soil behind the fence. There's a little bit forest area, a lot of dead leaves are there. So. And very composted soil there, it's really soft and brownish, so I want to try use that soil.
Yeah, we also have a similar thing, that outside of the fence, then there is soil, but like everything up to the fence line is sand.
Yeah.
It's a similar thing to what you were describing.
Mm.
And then we have, a small squatted garden. It's a little bit, large squatted garden, but off the squat. But it's a bit shady is the only trouble. But otherwise, so mixed results so far, but I'm going to try again next year.
Mm-hmm. I want to go for it. Tell a short secret about what we did last year. Instead of buying the soil, there were some gnomes walking around with wheelbarrows, and they came also from behind the fence.
So you moved.
Don't fence me
in.
Oh,
no, no, no.
Other strategy. There are many ways. I guess I'm really intrigued by, I think it's, really fantastic that you went to all of that effort to move 12 cubes of soil.
Digger. and two cube bags. Cleaning two cube bags. We had lots of fun.
Yeah. I'm very glad to hear you had the help of the digger.
Yeah, must.
Yeah. And it's unfortunate that the site at the RAM is so polluted. And I know you've gone to a lot of efforts to remediate the soil.
Yeah.
And I wonder if you want to say something about that and what you've done there and how you think it's going, whether you see any signs of success or when you expect to see that or how you will know.
Yeah, the remediation, what we started, actually the main person is Chiara. She is moving mushrooms from the Tuinen van West. They grow mushrooms there to sell commercially. They don't put the mycelium, they get it from somewhere else, but they have this substrate from the wood sawdust. And they already, the myceliums of different mushrooms are in, like the king oyster, other yellow oyster, namaki, Japanese.
Oh wow.
And, yeah. And shiitake. And she is putting the mainly, well, all of them in the part where the food forest is, but lately it's also in the back of the area where people living and where they also want to clean the soil more, because it's very known from the oyster mushroom that it can get out, and the word I was looking for was mineral oil. It can get out the mineral oil of the soil, and there is a range of different mushrooms who can do different tricks. Different pollutions. I try to look up, but it's pretty hard, the plants and trees who can clean the soil. But I'm so happy to found out that poplars are very good to get out the heavy metals, and we happen to have a lane or along the roadside where we have the new food forest border, there is all poplar growing, and they are already pretty big. So that means since a while, since many years already, they suck out the heavy metals, and they keep it in the wood, so it's totally out of the soil. But then at one point we wanted to make the hugels, so the hills, what you make with the wood, to make new beds, and then you cover it, and the wood will compost,
decomposed
yeah. underneath the earth. Then it was don't use the poplar wood, because you will release all the heavy metals again. But anyway, this remediation is a really nice idea, but there is still a big problem, because there is no point of waste where you could drop your mushrooms or your wood, what will take it out. In the case of mushrooms, it's known that they will diminish the amount of pollution. So in a way, over many years, you could reach a point where the pollution is very much diminished.
When I was doing compost toilets, it's similar to this. It's like, how do you deal with the waste from the waste? The waste from the waste from the waste. You've done your remediation, you've cleaned something, you've turned it into something else useful.
You bury it in someone else's backyard.
Yeah, but the other thing is, some things just don't break down.
Yeah.
It's also an acceptance. Deborah wants to say something, because she's gone deeper into the rabbit hole, the poo hole, than we have.
She wants?
No, she's
just this one is the one for the radio.
How do you break down heavy metal? How do you break down elements that just don't want to break down?
Well, I would urge people to not focus on breaking them down. I would urge people to not be afraid of the soils, but to Shoko, come back.
Come back.
Come back, Shoko.
Okay. Oh,
private message. I would urge people to, stabilization is important. That we shouldn't focus on an impossible physical aspect of
breaking down
something that cannot be broken down. There is pollution on the earth. We need to focus on stabilizing it and putting it where we can handle it, which means we plant things that don't uptake the pollutants, the contaminants, which is relatively simple. Mm-hmm. And that we should not waste it's very inspirational, and I can only applaud what I've heard so much from your stories, from both of your stories, but I would urge us all to not fear the soil, even if it is what we call contaminated with metal, definitely with metal. Do not fear this, because what needs to happen to soil that's contaminated with metals is it needs to be stabilized so that it doesn't erode in the wind, it doesn't enter the water table, mm-hmm. and that it is not uptaken mm-hmm. by the food that we eat. So it was uptaken mm-hmm. by the poplar. You don't have to remove it. You have to keep it still.
In the poplar.
Mm-hmm. So it's still in the poplar. And you need to not
don't
plant...
Don't chop the poplars down.
You need to plant plants who do not uptake the metals into the food part that you eat, and that's actually not very many plants. Yeah. So it's certain families. So you have to not worry about the thing that you would not be able to fix. With regard to the mineral oils and the plastic pots and the pobs, all those things are very indeed very dangerous, but the soil needs to not enter the water table, so it needs to be stabilized, needs to not be affected by wind and water erosion, and that is exactly what you're doing. And after that, there must just not be uptake. That is most plants. Grow your spinach and your amaranth family in a different soil medium, but that's all. That's all I wanted to say, so that people aren't afraid of the soil.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for sharing.
Thanks, Deborah.
Yeah. I wanted to
Deborah
ask
from
Obrani
and Hoover, by the way.
But thanks a lot, Deborah. Where to from there? Do you want to say anything in response to that? Do you have any initial words?
Yeah, what I'm looking for, actually, like you told about the Amaranth family, it would be very great to have more sources about this, because when I'm on internet and I'm looking for what plant can help or what takes it in or not, then it's totally taken over by commercial big companies who want to keep the secret with them and not tell you. You can buy the information on a site. I think it's something everyone has the right to know. For example, I could find that pumpkins would really take it in themselves, and also the mustards. But if you ever find a source, a book or some other internet source where things come together, I totally try to find me, because I'm looking for it, really. Mm. For plants, especially. For mushrooms, there is already good books. Yeah.
All right. And then, what is the vision then for the remediation?
At the moment, so with the thought that mushrooms could make it less, people want to do it. There is a big difference now, because the mushrooms are still in the substrate, so they're not yet totally in the soil. So people are very happy to eat from it as well, although, yeah. Later on, that might be not so handy, but the idea is that the mycelium will be everywhere in the soil. But there is a beautiful thing of the mycelium. It helps and connects plants, and I think it's a beautiful addition to the garden and the whole area anyway, and it looks like fairy tales sometimes.
Yeah, it's really amazing.
But yeah, the remediation, it's just also happening from by itself, I see, because just discovering that the mustards are really good to take pollution, there is growing by itself mustards, there is the reed growing already. Grasses are also good at it, bigger ones, and so the trees who are already there. So I mainly want to discover actually what is doing what, and then looking what you told, what you asked, like how do you see it? Or I think only another test in a few years would can prove things, but I trust that it will help, and that makes me feel better to grow things around. Already on the food forest edge, I must say we don't grow in crates. That is the higher part of the whole bassin system in the beginning, so I trust on the fact we did a little bit of soil test and even a water soil test, water test, like to see how polluted it is there. Much less heavy metals in the water in the little canal. I see the oil floating on it, so that's one thing. So we even have mushrooms inside the water ditch to get it out. What I want to say is I already trust that part more, and especially for the poplar trees who are growing there already. We have planted berries, and I have all the medicinal herbs. I mean, for cosmetics and small amounts of herbs, I feel already comfortable by that.
I can add something about the fine stuff as well, because it's like under and over. Mm-hmm. And basically, I use like simple logics, because I'm not good at reading big heavy books. So it was like, okay, the motorway is that way. The sun's coming that way to the garden I take care of anyway. So we just left some trees like this, which will catch all the crap. Sorry, trees, we did say sorry. So that you have kind of a natural boundary to catch. It's like catching dust. Yeah, cobweb, like air dust. So from underneath we keep the soil as clean as possible. Worm. Manure and horse manure, and we just keep an eye on it as much as possible. I would encourage people to think about that as well.
Are you able to see the dust at your place, or it's just something that you know happens?
I've seen it in other places. I haven't seen it at our place, but I have seen grimy veggies, and then you don't want to eat it, and it's just common sense. I would say, you know, any book you read, I'm super simple, ask Deborah. I'm like, it's like, just use common sense. Like, look where you are and see what's happening, and use the sun direction and the wind direction. And if you know that the motorway is there, then make yourself a natural barrier which doesn't block the sun. And or look for shady plants if you've got a shady place.
And I guess if you have a choice, you can try and think about the dominant wind direction, and depending how much land you have, try to put your garden.
Yeah, because we're talking about reclaimed spaces, water spaces, stuff like this, and a lot of them are like next to a road, next to a motorway,
on
polluted lands. All of the above altogether. You know, so it's just use your common sense. You don't actually need many books for that as well.
Then I want to ask you a bit about. So we've been talking about food forests. I know you also have a background in permaculture.
Deborah has the background in permaculture. Oh. No, I did a basic. Basically, I'm more acquainted with social permaculture. Let's say,
I want to say I think it's really fantastic that you say social permaculture, because permaculture involves the social aspect, but a lot of people think of it as only being the garden.
Well, basically what I can say about the Hemelfart, coming back to the Hemelfart gardens, is I'm very impressed by the fact that there are autonomous gardens there and people still share. So it's still a free space for the person who decides to do something with it, and in their own way. which provides diversity. It doesn't mean that you have to slave an Erica to death in order for something to happen. Not necessarily that, but you don't have to wait for an Erica for something to happen. Mm. I just realized that in a conversation recently, somebody said, oh, I really want to be like Erica Hedgley, you know? And I'm like, yeah, but she has to take care of everything, or Deborah. And it's like, when you have diversity of interest, diversity of knowledge, diversity of capacity, then you can go far. And as soon as the lockdown happened, we just went, right, who's got what? Okay, and who, yeah. And we, you know, I personally decided to invest in seeds, and I had a seed bank, and other people had seed banks. It was the first time I saw lots of people getting together without discussion, and it's like, we're going to make sure we can feed ourselves. And that's what it's about. That's why you have a garden, you know? And then from that, it's like, well, do you like growing this? Do you know how to... Do you like growing this? Do you know how to grow this? And does it grow in your garden? Three questions, really important. So I'm a broad fairy. So it's like what we introduced was, red melder. I was like, please take it. And I introduced the concept to them. It's like, if it doesn't grow in my garden, it'll grow in your garden and we can share it. And that for me is social permaculture. So plants, I'll go to everyone else. But making it happen, it's quite simple, actually. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I want to ask a question about choosing what things to grow, and we've already spoken about and I know you're really interested in different, more what we would call wild herbs, and then how do you decide whether that goes in sort of the... you know, what we traditionally call the garden, or this goes in the more food forest area, and how do you make those decisions?
Well, you mix it everywhere. I mean, it's very important that wild plants who come from themselves in a certain spot, they are wished for. I mean, often they add or take something from the soil that is like not in balance. So, mainly it's not weeding too much around, and I also love to talk with people about what wild plants you can eat and what they can help you with, like a medicine. So actually I'm a bad weeder. It's before a workshop on
I think you're in a good
foraging, yeah, then I tell everyone not to weed because we need those plants for showing and tasting. But anyway, with us in the ADM, the food forest border is has become a medicinal one, so on purpose, yeah. I put wild plants there, and I try to sow them as well, but that's a bit harder.
You just have to find the more aggressive one than the one that's already growing.
Yeah. Well, we can, but that is a decision. But when they pop up somewhere, think about what can I do with them and why they are here. Yeah.
For example, what was it? Brand nettle, they show that there's something specific in the earth. I'm really crap with
details. Nitrogen is the thing, but they also give it choco.
Please. Yeah, exactly.
We are
your
talking
turn.
Too much.
Your turn. It's your home space.
This year I had a really interesting experience with the bardock. I got soil from Ivory. They composted this soil there for a couple of years, and I still a little bit of soil because I knew that it's very nutrition soil. So I put it on one of my garden bed. And next year I had, but this year I have a full of bardock growing there. And
that's great.
Yeah, you can eat the roots. You can make tea from it, and it's just really healthy. So
liver cleaning. Mm-hmm.
So I want to keep this bardock garden as a bardock garden forever.
Wow. Nice. Yeah.
And then,
maybe if you want to say something about well, the different types of, so we've talked about establishing the soil and remediating the soil, but the different types, different ways of adding nutrition to the soil through the worm farm or through plants or through other types, and if you have some tips or tricks or stories you want to share.
Okay, I can go with the worm farm.
The worm?
Personally, as a waste management person, I would just make sure everywhere you go and everywhere you settle as a group, that you ensure that your food waste, your waste is incorporated directly back to the garden in a sensible way. And there are many different types of compost that you don't even have to turn or change. You come pass by. But it's like there's a worm farm for fresh stuff and your coffee and your cardboard waste even as well. There's hot compost, which will do about anything else. There's aerobics and anaerobics, how I teach people, you know. I remember it that way. You know, there's stinky shit that you'll always find in every garden as long as you've got brand nettles. So you can always find a way to treat your garden to give it life. What I noticed with this earth that you get from the council is dead most of the time. You have to bring it back to life. So you can either go to the manege to get horse manure to start off with. That's one way of doing things, and it's one type of manure. Then you've got worm manure, you've got chicken manure. You can just call it all manure, and it's got different levels of acidity or earthiness, you know, general nutrients. Anaerobic's pretty heavy shit. You have to also, you can dilute it and spray it or add it. And it also depends a lot with Deborah about the how strong your fertilizer is on your seedlings. Tomatoes, for example, they don't like really strong fertilizer. So it's also a knowledge about how to give nutrients to what.
I learned a lot last year.
Yeah.
You know a lot. Is it enough to just add things to the surface of the soil, and does this go down to the roots if you just put things on top?
No.
There's
also other methods like changing the place of the plants, which I learned from the iPlane garden. They did wonderful courses for that too, also a social project. And you can do a whole course about how you... which plants you rotate and how, so that you feed the soil different things just from the plants that you seed. I am not knowledgeable about which plants, but I know that it's a system that works.
Yeah, but in small gardens, I mean, we're not talking about really agriculture. In smaller spaces, I do not so much rotation, actually, but the companionship is more important to me. And as well, the that's true, good company in the garden. I want to say short thing about some experiment that we are not really happy with now at the moment in the ADM. It's also the aquaponics what we have there. It's another manure, but the fish one. So
fed worm poo to keep it alive.
Yeah, you can do it vegan. No, it's not vegan if you have worm poo, actually. All the poo.
It's vegan. It's vegan, they only eat vegetables.
They can eat poo, right? If it's not
fresh, I'm not going to do the discussion, but there's, I'm not even vegan myself,
no worms
totally.
In it.
So
the worms are like, sort of kept in captivity, I guess. But
But we will do this in your workshop. This discussion next Friday from 5 o'clock in Slipfeld. But what I want to say about this, it was a really enthusiastic person who wanted to learn us how to put on the system technically, and then it is like you have you need electricity somehow to have the motor going on to the pump to. From one basin where the fish are, the water is pumped in a circular way through a bed, and you can grow plants without earth, which is already a bit against my natural feelings.
Yeah,
but he was so enthusiastic, and I think we are open to more people than where we are. But after a year of almost a year waiting for the fish to come in the system, so we had a really good growing of garlic and mint and even some easy stuff with only the worm poo in the bassin and no fish. And now the fish are there, and I had a shisho plant, a herb from Japan, which is also doing really well. Now the fish are there. But we don't like this to have fish in one cubic water reservoir. We don't like to use them like this. First, because we were talking about waste, I was thinking it's really perfect because compost is made of, well, when you put your kitchen scraps in the compost, you don't throw your rice, cooked rice or some bread and stuff like that. So my first idea about the aquaponics was, hey, this is the missing link. The fish can eat the rice and the bread.
Yeah.
But it appears that the African catfish we got from the guy they eat meat, but we feed them beans at the moment.
Okay.
And then we heard afterwards, when we got the fish already in, we heard that they cannot bear the winter here, so they will probably die. So I'm sorry to tell this,
somebody,
but I think we can be honest about failures in our gardens. I learned a lot.
And we've mentioned like seeds and sharing plants a few times, and it's very common to buy seeds from the supermarket and or from other gardening centers, but there's also seed sharing initiatives around Amsterdam. And how important is it to share seeds and to use other people's seeds, or is it just saving cost, or does it make such a difference?
Shook.
What?
Yeah.
So yeah, if you can create your own seeds, so you're not gonna be depending on the company anymore, and also you can get a plants that probably survive in the certain climate that's probably better for your gardens or like maybe other gardens. But you support indigenous species of the plants, you get more diversity of the vegetables in your gardens if you use local seeds or related to the more wider kind of plants. Mostly it's much stronger than just plants from garden house or whatever. Then maybe you don't need to feed them so much, or you don't need to do so much to maintain the crops. That is kind of like aim to get more local seed, or seed that somebody grows in their garden and succeeded, and they, you know, that that's probably fit in your garden too.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's good for this area, otherwise they're making these seeds, packaging them in factories and sending them out around the world.
Depending on the little or the time.
So basically, if anyone's listening that's not familiar with this subject already, basically it's the cycle of, to break the cycle of buy a seed, buy fertilizer, fuck the land, don't have something that's going to grow more than once. That's basically the commercial system. And then you have to add more fertilizers next time around, and then you have to get new seeds that can go into the fertilized ground, because it's not local. What
what is normal, let's say, is that you have an earth and seeds that are compatible with each other. And then, like Shoko just said, is that you have a stronger plant because it's a stronger soil and you know exactly what's in the soil. So we're adding the factor of the fertilizers and the care, and you know what's in it. Basically, most, let's say, Monsanto or commercial seeds, they have a coating on them as well that makes it difficult to grow. Yeah,
to protect them from fungi in keep them. I want to add a little funny thing. We are preparing, actually, we are preparing small, I think, a seed library in the Slipvelde. So that means that people can come over, pick their seeds. I want to promote to just only add the seeds what you grown yourself, so you exactly know what it is, and it comes from the region then when you are living in Amsterdam. So what is the seed library different from seed banks or exchange is that you can come and pick your seeds, and if you grow them, leave some up to flowering, pick the seeds again, and next year come in and add your seeds. I heard that in the north, in Groningen, I think, and maybe also region Utrecht, they have really already good functioning libraries. Okay. But around here, not yet. But yeah, as we are all busy people, sometimes this project is already setting up now, but it will take some time before we will have a good amount of homegrown seeds. But welcome later to grab your stuff. We will announce something then.
Yeah, fantastic. And I'm going to say, I think I've got one, maybe two more questions, and then time, I think it's time to wrap it up. We've been talking for a long time. I want to ask the audience if anyone has a question or wants to think about a question, then we have some time for that, and three very knowledgeable, interesting people up here, and Deborah also in the audience. But lastly, I'm really curious if you can say something about why it's so important to have a garden in these spaces. Why is it important to have to use medicinal herbs as an alternative to pharmaceuticals, or to use herbs to create cosmetics as alternatives to the cosmetic industry? If you can say something about that, that would be really fantastic.
Already a while ago it happened that a friend of mine was breaking the ribs, and I was looking for some herb or something to help out, and it was very easy to find this wild plant because it grows everywhere here in the area. It's a comfrey smearwortel, and it was like totally not in any shop around, so you could get it online. But I thought, what weird, this is something that is really known for, and it is a strong working medicine. So I thought, well, then I make it myself, and then I can help my friend with it. So that's how it all started, to be conscious of not only against the pharmaceutical industry, but there are lacks. Of course, they try to keep out all these simple remedies from their thing. What is happening actually, that the whole plants are extracted in chemical substances in the pharmaceutical industry, and that they might be very strong in your medicine what you buy. But I am convinced that when you use the whole plant or the parts of the plant directly from the plant, that it's much more balanced than having the specific chemical substance. So I already believe that this is more meant for the human body. So maybe in really dangerous and heavy cases of illness, I would recommend to have some doctor's help, of course. And you need, I mean, I'm still a beginner, I'm studying it in my way, but I cannot pretend anything to have for people who are ill or have their problems, that we can save them in this way. Though I want to inspire people to think otherwise, that they could help with simple, with the throat ache, some other stuff, that you could have the willow bark for a little bit of painkiller, that things are all around us and they're beautiful. And maybe I hope to be a bit older and be able to know more and more and more, because it's a fascinating world, and definitely, it's so strange that we're cut off the natural way of healing ourselves with the plants. So that's one thing, and I always also advise people to be very careful. Don't use the plant with the alkaloids, for example. That's what we call poison plants. They have some healing ability, but more in specific homeopathic way for dunning solution.
Yeah.
So that's very specific. Just don't experiment. Dilute it. Okay. But there is a lot what you can make yourself and what can help yourself. Like, for example, the valerian root to calm you down. The lemon balm, citroen melissa, also for women, it's really a nice relaxing thing. During menstruation, you have a lot of herbs. So what I put in this medicinal forest border is simple, not dangerous herbs, what you could apply for simple, not too bad diseases. And the other thing is this, how nice it is to make a shampoo for free. I mean, from your stuff growing around, just take the nettles, the rosemary, some ivy for the soapy quality, or some chestnuts, horse chestnuts, for the same soapy thing.
Oh, really?
How funny, and how nice and it feels. I mean, it might be not as long houdbar, but you should put it in it. Some, yeah. You should keep it. No, it doesn't last as long. Maybe even you could put some alcohol in some products, or some vitamin C from the lemon, or some other things to keep up the time you can use it. But make small amounts. Do it more often.
Yeah.
Just make small amounts and use them. Look what it does with you. Look if you like it. Check it out. Experiment with it. So cosmetics is even less dangerous to do. I mean, it's. I really like to inspire people to try it out, and some like it.
Mm. Can I add something? To compliment you, actually. It's a compliment. Well done, Erica. I'm doing ivy. So basically what you can do, I'm doing washing liquids from ivy. I'm doing a nice experiment with that at the moment. So at the same time, I'm again doing waste management and then using it. But I just learned recently that people want a whole liter, and it's like, no, nature provides what you need. Take what you need, use it, and then find some fresh stuff again. There will always be what you need. Nature provides. And secondly, another perspective on taking care of yourself is like, you don't have to wait till something's wrong before you can do plant medicine. You can actually boost your immune system and get your body used to it. Because, for example, we're not used to, I tried out dandelion tea instead of coffee. And like anything that tastes like that must be healthy for you, because it's just too heavy duty. But basically, we're not used to eating that kind of greens anymore and using those kind of medicines. So it's also getting used to the natural medicines that are the natural herbs that are there for you to keep you healthy. It's not only waiting to take medicine. It's just a daily use.
Yeah, nibble them.
They're nibble them. Yeah. Just get used to the taste, get used to your body, like Erica explained, it's a whole balance. It's a whole balance. So that's why it's good for you. So if you do it in small doses every day, your iron will be plenty good, you know? It's just basic logics again, but getting used to it. We're not used to it anymore. Right, Jack?
Yeah, I used to live in Japan and I always got this anti-histamine, kill the old bacteria things.
Antibiotic
for anything. If I got cold or flu, the doctor immediately prescribed antibiotics. And yeah, I used to this kind of medicine. I always had a lot of medicine when I was there. And since started living here, yeah, doctor doesn't prescribe the antibiotics anymore. And I need to fight for the flu myself. And yeah, without any pills. And it was hard in the beginning. I really had to struggle with my health for a couple of years. But after that, I definitely felt much more confident about my health, and now I'm start using more garden stuff to heal my whatever, like a cold or headache or any kind of things. Then I feel more know about my body than before. Instead of asking to doctor like what's happening on my body, I start observing my body more than before, and yeah, just feel more connection with myself and my body, and that's I think that was really great change for my life. And yeah, I feel more easy to live on this earth because there's a lot of plants that's actually very useful, so you can just do it or take it without paying money or like asking somebody. So
and I think feeling connected to this plant,
surroundings,
this earth,
also
our local surroundings is just super important. And so often I just get life, or maybe other people too, feel really lost in the world and sort of maybe a bit meaningless also. And I think then to feel like an interaction and relationship with plants and what's growing and what's living in the more natural world around me, then really helps me feel a bit like settled and a place of belonging. And I guess the last thing that I does anyone have a question? No? Are you sure? Okay, does anyone here have a question? Or something to say? No. Well, I just want to also say that I think it's really... Well, we spoke about it on the phone, that it's really another great thing about having a garden in spaces like this, in squatted spaces, is that gardens are also just really appreciated by a lot of people. They're warm, welcoming, friendly places, and the municipality also really like people to have gardens, and they do look at squatted spaces with a more friendly eye if there is a garden there, if that's part of the space or if that is the whole space. So it's an extra sort of security or insurance, just a little bit, if you have a garden there too.
It's also a way of getting in touch with the neighbors, because most of them don't have a garden. So they will definitely come there, even if it's only to one, two or three times. So you can easily make a connection with the neighbors, even if it's just, we found out at the Looters, like some people just want to come to sit in a nice place for a cup of tea, and that's also okay. You're sharing the space. It's for everyone. It's not just for squatters, especially not
Yeah, I remember that that was happening in Beiersdorf, for example, a lot, because it was in the middle of office buildings, and people from the office on Friday afternoon, they love to sit there and drink their beer. Yeah, and I think it's totally logic. People, human beings are always, they need nature and green and plants, plant life, animal, everything around them. So it's a must in this city world where it's lacking of the garden greens. The bigger, well, the parks are there, of course. And then So this as well, I promoted a lot for children, like that they can already start with the to think it's normal to be in a garden, to grow stuff, to see how you get your apple. I mean, how that things come into the shop is often
that in earth the city. Is not dirty.
That it's not dirty. Yeah.
Yes. Oh, wow. Yeah. Great point. Well, thank you all so much for making some time today, especially today because it's very busy. And it was really lovely and interesting to have this moment to ask you questions and talk to you and sit together.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Very nice.
Thank you, audience. If you enjoy what you're listening to, please follow Soil Matters on your favorite podcast platform. And please, if you're on Apple Podcasts, please rate Soil Matters because it helps us reach more people. And thank you all so much for listening. See you next time.